Welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast. Each week you'll find inspirational, motivational interviews with some of the world's best language learners, industry experts, all trying to help you to learn foreign languages better, faster, and more efficiently. And here we go. If you're looking for a language teacher to enhance your language learning, then I highly recommend Italki. Italki is the world's biggest tutoring platform, and you can find thousands of teachers and tutors at very reasonable prices. Get a free lesson after completing your first lesson by going to languageteacher.co. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 168 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. This is the podcast where I interview polyglots, language learning experts, and industry professionals to try and inspire and motivate you to learn foreign languages faster, more efficiently, as the introduction said, which probably will be changing soon, but it's been there for a while, so I'm feeling a little nostalgic about it. But today we're continuing the episode with John Fotheringham from LanguageMastery.com. He's been podcasting alongside with me for many years. It's been a while since we both started, and in this kind of long episode, it's an experimental format where we just have a chat about what we've learned over the years and how language learning really is kind of a metaphor for life and success and human achievement in many ways. So there's not much to say other than enjoy the episode here with John. If you haven't listened to the first part, of course, I recommend you to go back to 167 and just get caught up. I know it's quite a long episode, and that's also why we decided to split it into two pieces. It could probably have been split into three pieces, to be honest, but we decided just to split it into two. I sometimes get messages from people who think that the podcast is a little bit too long. I occasionally also get people saying that they really like the long formats. So there's really no way for me to find... There's no sweet spot, I think. There's always going to be people who would like more. There's also people... And I know it myself. Like, if I listen to a really long podcast, it's hard to finish it if it's, you know, 2-3 hours long, like Joe Rogan or similar podcasts. So I'm not going to start shortening the episodes intentionally, but I might start cutting them up into several episodes instead, just to give you some breathing room in between and maybe listen over several sessions instead of feeling that you have to binge 1.5 hours of podcasting in one sitting. So, but anyway, this is part two of my chat with John Fotheringham, and we called it the Inside the Language Podcaster Studio, which is a nod to the Inside the Actor Studio show by James Lipton, where he interviews famous actors and actresses and makes them talk about their career. We don't have James Lipton with me here, but we do have John Fotheringham and myself, so do enjoy it. And just a quick shout out, if you are interested in the Polyglot Cruise, do go to polyglotcruise.com. We're taking off in April, and there's still a few spots remaining. And if you're listening to this in the future, go to polyglotcruise.com, sign up to the email list, and see where we're going to go for future Polyglot Cruises. All right. Thank you so much for listening, and see you in the next one. If I had to give just one tip, I think, if I was like pressed, it would probably be just do something.
Yeah.
Just do something.
Right.
Don't worry about what it is or how you're doing it. Just do it. And once that thing you're doing becomes painful or no longer enjoyable,
yeah,
do something else.
Do something, right. But you're still doing something.
Yeah, because obviously I'm sure there are people listening to this who are, maybe they've learned a few languages on their own, and you know, they kind of know the game, so to speak.
Right.
And for those people, I my podcast at least, I don't know how you feel about this. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. It's mostly for motivation and kind of a sense of belonging. It's mm-hmm. like a group kind of tribe to be part of.
Yeah, it's, but you're normalizing this hobby, I think, is a big part of what I think. It wasn't what I set out to do, but definitely it's something that has come about sort of organically. And same thing with, I think, the Polyglot Gathering, the Polyglot Conference, Langfest, you know, your upcoming Polyglot Cruise. I think a lot of these events what makes them so wonderful is, yeah, there's cool tips and you go to lectures and learn, you know, maybe some new strategies. But the biggest thing is you're around all these other language nerds, basically, that normalize this obsession. They make it a normal, cool, acceptable thing to do instead of you being the one weird one at Thanksgiving dinner who, you know, you're the only one around the table who speaks maybe even one foreign language, let alone multiple foreign languages.
Yes, yeah. That's a good point to bring up as well. It's adding a platform to a hobby that is a very, by nature, quite an isolated hobby.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you're talking to people, but the bulk of your actual learning comes from usually either textbooks or talking to strangers that it's hard to build deep relations with, or a teacher who you're essentially paying to listen to you, which, you know, can be enjoyable. You know, I've had good relationships with my teachers.
Yeah.
But I'm not pretending that they're my best friend because, right, you know, they're being paid to listen to me. Yeah. So, you know, nothing ill against any teachers out there, but it's a different relationship than me talking to my best mate,
right,
you know, down the pub,
right,
or whatever. So it's a fine balance.
And, it's linguistic prostitution in a way.
Kind of, yeah, I was going to make that analogy, but I didn't know.
Well, that's where my brain went.
So thank you for that. Everyone was thinking it anyway. But, yeah. And
That's why I'm here.
But another thing I wanted to just quickly go over with you, if you've got a few more minutes,
sure,
is the idea that what you do with the languages often don't make sense until later.
Yeah, it's delayed return. Yeah.
Yeah, and also the you connect the dots looking backwards.
Right.
That's a Steve Jobs reference. But it opens so many doors. Like, if you listen to any of, I don't know, how many episodes do you have on Language Mastery?
It's kind of embarrassing how few, considering how long I've been doing this. But,
well, quality over quantity.
I don't know about that, but I'm approaching 40.
Right. Yeah. So you've got 40 episodes and you've got 150 or so on Actual Fluency that basically each feature a different story from someone who used languages in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And I would like to offer just an example, you know, my story, for example. When I started doing my podcast and my website, I didn't know that languages was going to be kind of my career or go-to. But just by putting myself out there, interviewing people, connecting with other language learners, going to the conferences, I have achieved a lot that I would never even have – it wouldn't have been possible if I had followed – the kind of trajectory I had before I went into the languages. Like, I've been to the US several times. I've been to Canada. I've been to conferences in Bratislava and Budapest and in, you know, all because I went to the conference. And you know, the opportunities when you keep active in a community, probably got community is probably the best word. The rewards they show up, and right, you're in the community. Now you have teachers who are passionate about the language, who eventually build businesses out of nothing.
Right.
You know, you have people like Benny who was blogging about his language learning, making a few videos, who now employs like a team of people to help him run the site. And he's been living entirely off that site for, you know, as long as I've been doing this as well.
Okay.
And that's just one example. You know, I went to the first Polyglot gathering, and this was during some of my worst times. You know, I really was quite bad at that time in terms of like depressive state and didn't really have much of a future. Didn't really know what I was going to do. And you can imagine like having a podcast where 20 people download it every month is not exactly a light at the end of the tunnel just yet. Right. But
well, there's a metaphor there for learning a language too, right? I mean, creating a podcast or a blog, there is a lot of delayed return there as well, but you're knowing I'm going to keep putting one foot in front of the other and eventually it'll be something.
Yeah, but it all comes from putting in the work, and if you put in the work to the language, not only can you get amazing careers, I mean, there's so many people in the community who found their life partner, their soulmate, mm-hmm, because they'd learned the language.
Right.
And, you know, some people do it the other way around as well. They meet someone and then they learn it.
Sure.
I've interviewed so many people who met the loved one because of the language. Right. But that's just one example. You know, right. You can get jobs, you can get free drinks, you can get whatever. There's so many things that open up. But for me, the big life-changing experience was I was interviewing people at the polyglot gathering because I brought my computer. I was like, because I didn't really know anyone back then. So it's really hard just to email people and go, you want to be on my podcast? And I think I had recorded 3 episodes by the time I was there. So basically I wanted to record a few episodes there, just rope people in and take them to my room. And people were extremely nice. But the one thing that stands out, and I'm sure he doesn't mind me sharing the story, is Richard Simcott. He works today, and he was at that time working as like the language expert of a social media agency based in London. They use freelancers. And after the podcast, I recorded like an hour with him in my room. After the podcast, he's like, do you want a job? It's like, what? And then he explained what they were doing. You know, they did social media management and all that kind of stuff. They needed a Danish person to basically run Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts for businesses. And I was like, hell yeah. You know, but that had never happened unless I'd kind of stuck into it. And there might be a bit of a difference between, I mean, just learning a language is obviously, you know, it's going to give you some opportunity, but the big opportunities come when you network within it as well. So let's say you learn Russian. If you start going to Russian cultural events, or you go to Russia frequently for your habit, your interest. And actually, this is a great example as well. You know, video games are getting huge. We talked about how I got into English with video games. If I had learned Russian to a high level or a higher level, then I could be a translator or like a content creator in video games. I could even pick like my video game and say, okay, there's this big tournament every year. Like my game was Dota 2. So there's a big tournament called the International. And I think the first prize back then was about $10 million for the winning team.
Wow.
So that's about, you know, it's like $1.5 million for each player. And that is seen by 500,000 people live. And there's like 50,000 people in the stadium as well where they host the event. And Russia is one of the biggest gaming countries in the world. They really like video games in Russia. So if I had learned Russian to a higher level, I can still do this, by the way. I'm not interested in it now. I'm trying to step back from gaming a little bit. I could basically combine my interests that way, and I would be such a valuable asset because not a lot of people have Russian skills with high English skills and are interested in gaming.
Right.
I think the last one is the important bit. And with languages, it's the same.
Right.
But my point is more that languages are really not just communication. They open so many doors. And this goes back to how I got started in the first place. I just decided that languages were practical. But I've gotten so much back from being in being in the community. I'm not a great language learner. You know, I'm not a great polyglot or great achiever. I'm not much of a learner. I'm really more of a messenger. I like the...
I'm the same, yeah. I
like
the
message of language learning a lot more. And if I can kind of inspire people who have the real talents and the real... talent to work hard, I would say, you know, the interest to make amazing results happen, then for me, that's the greatest gift that I can give. Me learning languages myself, I'll probably always be dabbling in something, you know, but it's just not a priority anymore.
Well,
but even that,
we all have
get the
results. Yeah, we all have a different, I think, role to play. And what I've found is that usually those that are really good at doing a thing are not very good at communicating how to do that thing. And that's sort of something I think I think you and I both kind of have sort of found our way in that we've realized that we can be better at communicating the way other people do what they're doing in a way that's compelling and easy to understand. And
I think I could be good at learning languages because I know all the theory and I've interviewed everyone or not everyone, but I interviewed a lot of successful people who have learned, you know, 10, 20, 30 languages, all of them.
Right.
And so it's not that I couldn't do it. I just don't want to.
Right.
That's the big difference.
That's not your purpose. Yeah.
Exactly. You make and I had, I recorded some episodes. I think it's about a year ago or something that I recorded some episodes. So I called them polyglot therapy, because there is a real danger as well out there that people feel pressured to learn languages, or, you know, add more languages or all these things for vanity.
Yeah.
When I don't think
it's like trophies or notches in a belt. Exactly. Yeah. You're right.
So I think it's important to understand that the language learning should come from a place of want and need.
Right.
Maybe not so much need as want, but like, you shouldn't learn Spanish because you saw someone else did it and you thought it could be cool to have a language in your belt.
Right.
You know, you can certainly do that. It's not impossible. And I think you can brute force any kind of learning. You know, that's how most people do it in the school.
Yeah.
Not very many people care about maths and biology in school, but, you know, we still learn it. And obviously a few people really like it, so they continue with it. But that's the same for languages. But it's just so much harder if you're trying to do it for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was definitely doing that because, you know, when you're talking to successful language learners all the time, you're just like, oh, I should speak more languages. And you go to the conferences, everyone has like 8 languages on their badge. You're like,
I know.
I should speak more languages. And yeah. I got caught up in that kind of illusion at some point. I was like, I felt like I had to.
Yeah.
And then somebody asked me, like, why are you learning this language? I was like,
I want another sticker on my badge at the next polyglot gathering.
Exactly. And I just thought, you know what? I'm perfectly fine being a dabbler.
Yeah.
Honestly told, I'm fortunate that I got a few free languages when I grew up. So it's not like I don't come to the polyglot conference with just a US flag.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything inherently wrong with that, but I could see how someone would say, well, Chris, it's easy for you to say that you're not learning languages when you already speak 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you count Swedish and Norwegian, which is obviously different languages, but they're very similar to Danish. So I got those for free. So the only real language that I've learned independently, and I haven't even learned it that well, is Russian,
mm-hmm.
which is getting to a very interesting level, which we could spend hours talking about. But, you know, I could definitely see some people thinking, it's easy to, for you to say.
Right.
And I totally understand that. That's fair enough. You know, it's very lucky and fortunate and kind of privileged to get all those languages. Similar, like if you live in some country, like multilingual countries, or if you're brought up by parents with different native languages, or, you know, you get advantages that you can't control. And I definitely appreciate that. But just don't learn for the wrong reasons.
But also, I think another key takeaway here is don't compare yourself.
You know, yes.
Don't compare yourself with anyone else. And it's hard. I mean, I say that's as much hard to myself as to others because, no, I mean, truth be told, when I got to the polyglot gathering in Bratislava this last June, that was my first, you know, polyglot event ever after blogging and podcasting about this stuff for 10 years. And a big part of why I had put off going so long was fear. Because I thought myself, like, oh, I only speak a few languages, so I know these people I've interviewed that speak 10 or 15 or more. And in my mind, I had it, that's what a polyglot was, or that to go to one of these events, you had to have all these, you know, at least 5 or at least 10 languages. And I don't know where I got that in my head, but it's ridiculous. Because, you know, you go to one of these events and there's people that speak 1 foreign language, there's people that speak 20, and it doesn't matter. It's not about how many stickers you have on your card. It's that you can connect with other people over this shared interest. And then beyond that, it almost becomes irrelevant. It's just, can you talk to another person in a language?
Yeah. What I would say is that I don't know if there's any kind of scientific reasons for this, but I would say my feeling is that the people who go to the events are very nice people. Mm. Like, it's like there's like this personality type that's attracted to the language learning world. And it's just really open, accepting, mm-hmm. friendly, welcoming people. So for me, when I went to the first one in Berlin like 5 years ago, I could choose languages as a kind of, you know, a niche almost. I don't know what to call it, like an area of my life that I wanted to be part of mm-hmm. because of the people in it.
Right.
You know, if I went to that first event and everyone was like a dick and saying, oh, you only have 3 languages on your badge.
Yeah. Next.
Then I would have just then I would never have gone to another event. I would have never right. produced any more podcast episodes.
Right.
Fortunately, as it turned out, everyone was super nice. And I've seen people attending those events who haven't learned their first foreign language yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, because I was intrigued, I was like, first of all, how did you find out about it? Why did you go to it? Mm-hmm. Turns out they had some friends who were going, and they were going on some kind of interrail trip, so they kind of tagged along. And I was like, that's amazing. And what did you think of the event? And he was like, I had a great time, absolutely lovely people, and I think I want to maybe check out learning French myself. So awesome. It's like,
yeah,
exactly. I mean, how good of an experience can you get? And I think there is this myth or idea that these language events are like 200 nerds with very thick glasses and, No, people are extremely diverse, fantastic, and you know, there's also been some myths that it's mostly a male activity.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely
not.
False.
I think in the early days,
was 50-50.
Yeah, I was talking about this with my wife the other day that, you know, when I first started the podcast, I did notice, I think I was about, I don't know, maybe five episodes in, and I thought, I've only interviewed guys, you know, and I just thought, oh, that's interesting. But then it wasn't intentional. It wasn't like I was excluding women on purpose or anything, but I just, the people that were on my radar in the language world at that time in 2009, almost everyone was male. But now you look at it and it's almost the other way. I would say so. Yeah. It's almost like 60-40 or 70-30. It seems like in terms of who's like really pumping out a lot of, you know, content in the podcast or the blogosphere. So it's cool. It's
from all over the world.
Yeah. Right? It's not only English speakers now that are doing podcasts
too. It's more common to find people at the gatherings who have, you know, a ton of languages that, and they're from other parts of the world. They're not just from Europe or the US.
Right.
It's a truly global phenomenon with such a big variety of people, personalities and backgrounds also, which I think is exciting. And I think when you're into multilingualism and you get a taste for how other people think and how other cultures live, it makes you appreciate people in a different way. And I think that's what's contributing to the really positive environments across these events. And that's also why I think committing to languages as a hobby, if you really like languages, if you like the idea of learning languages, if you like to make it your career, there's never been any easier time, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, this is not.
We'll just take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, iTalki, but we'll be right back. On this podcast, I've interviewed hundreds of language learners, some of the world's greatest polyglots and industry experts. And one thing they all agree on is the value of one-to-one tutoring lessons. And for this, I highly recommend iTalki. They have thousands of teachers in all price ranges, and they even have certified teachers who have taken diplomas or have degrees in the language you're learning. So whether you're just brushing up on your Italian ahead of a trip to Rome, or you want to master Russian to take the exam, or whatever your goals are in languages, iTalki has a tutor suitable for you. And compared to private tutoring offline, is really affordable. You can find informal tutors down to $5 an hour, and you can have trial lessons for even less. So if you want to master a language from the comfort of your own home, and you even get a $10 credit when you complete your first lesson, go to languageteacher.co and check out iTalki. It might be the best thing you do for your language learning this year.
You can do it now. If you want to teach your native language, you can. If you want to be a YouTuber, if you want to be a podcaster, a blogger, you know, you just do it. And you don't ask for permission. There are no gatekeepers. 20, 30 years ago, if you had to have a book published, for instance, how hard would it be? It would be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, you had to wait to be chosen. Yeah,
now it seems like all my friends are publishing books every other week with different publishers. You know, it's like, you know, Alex Rawlings and Benny's book was obviously very successful. Ollie is producing I think I'm part of the team, obviously, but he's really the main driving force, and he's putting out the 16 new short story books coming out, you know, from Teach Yourself, the big producer of Teach Yourself books for the last 100 years or something. You know, so it's going mega mainstream.
Right.
So if you're listening to this and you're just getting into it and you're not quite sure if you want to focus your efforts on the language market or the language community, they also say that the language market has, you know, it's worth billions of dollars. So, and there's a big value in it. And I think it's increasing as well. People are seeing the value of, let's say, accurate translations, good interpreters, offering content in people's own language.
Right.
And that was something I noticed when I was doing customer services. The fact that people, the fact that Danish people could call me and get help with their, I was working for a rental car company. The fact that they could call someone to speak their own language with, people were just like grateful for that. You know, they didn't have to, you know, they, of course they would be able to do it in English, mm-hmm. but it's not the same. It's like a,
It's a deeper connection.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that people are always saying, oh, we're going to reach a point where everyone speaks English and, you know, the globalization is just going to take over and there's not going to be any need for that. You know, everyone speaks English. Why have your different languages? But I think the companies that understand the value of that are going to be the winners of the future.
Yeah.
Because the more people who kind of, you know, it's so easy to travel now. I just got an email that I could go from Copenhagen, where I was born, to New York for 177 euros return.
Wow.
You know, try to give me the flight prices from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're looking at probably a 10-time increase.
Yeah.
All right, well, decrease in this example. So the world is getting smaller, which means, in my opinion, that the importance of cultural awareness, like you don't go to Japan and insult everyone before getting killed by the emperor or whatever. And, you know, you get to know a little bit about the language and the culture and for companies. And I think it's important to have this commercial part of it at the back of your head because, yeah, it's all a hobby. We're all having fun and it's all about, you know, learning languages and being part of a community, being part of something greater. But everything you do gets better if you can also make it your full-time thing, you know?
Right.
If you're just dabbling in languages, that's all right. But what about working as a, I don't know, language expert for a cultural advisor for a big Fortune 500 company who's going to open a new branch in a foreign country where you've been, you've traveled, you've learned the language to a high level? Like, could you not see, for instance, U.S. companies hiring someone like you to advise them on Japan? It's a big market.
There you go.
And someone listening out there could do the same. So,
right.
Really happy.
Or the other end of the spectrum, going back to the earlier in the conversation, of creating your own thing. You know, you can definitely provide value to existing companies, and that's one way to go.
Start small.
Yeah. Yeah. Personally, I don't ever want to work for anyone ever again. I like being my own boss, but.
Well, you're working for your audience, you know, you're serving.
Well, I'm working for my wife. That's,
you're working, that's it. Yeah. The family. Yeah.
Yeah. The family.
For the family.
Yeah.
For the family. Yeah.
That's making great. An offer you couldn't refuse.
But yeah, I like it. And that's also why I think that it's a good niche because you can talk about anything. Careers is one thing, your translation, study tips, methods, certificates, official kind of school diplomas, you know, there's a lot of areas, but definitely I would say the thing that really excites me is that anyone from anywhere can just create their own career, like, or start as a side hustle maybe, or a side job.
Yeah, I'll definitely give that tip, having gone down this road a few times. do not jump into trying to make your passion project pay the bills too early, because that puts a lot of extra stress on your project and on yourself, that just it kind of takes the joy out of it. So definitely
I think a lot of us have.
Yeah, Chris Guillebeau, I mean, he makes the great point, and he has that book Side Hustle, and then his podcast Side Hustle School. But I really like that, the approach he's taken. And so there's this allure of like jumping with both feet to be an entrepreneur, and I'm all about that. But I think not trying to make your art into your business, and not trying to make your business your art, I think having some some separation, it can be a healthy way to go.
Yeah, I found that the pressure of performing was just too much, and I wasn't really accountable to anyone, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just myself. And yeah, there's some pressure of, okay, if I don't do this, I can't eat.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, I knew that my family would support me if I failed. So for me, it doesn't work very well. But I think what I would recommend anyone who's interested in kind of going down that path is to create content, you know, whether it's a podcast or a blog or a YouTube channel, whatever medium you prefer. If you create regular content, network with people already in it, and you explore kind of the ways to grow and monetize that, then you will almost certainly be met with opportunities that you can pursue later.
Right.
And not just your own stuff, but like the job that I have now is a direct result of my efforts on Actual Fluency, like the podcast, the blog, the networking. You know, that's one thing that those events are really good for as well. You get to know people, and then if they need someone, like, I need someone who speaks, I'm actually doing a project soon as well, and I would never have gotten that project if I hadn't put myself out there, hadn't produced the content. I mean, it's a lot of work and a lot, sure, of it up front.
Yes.
But what I recommend people actually do is teach their native language to begin with,
yeah,
as a tutor, because,
yeah,
that's very low pressure. You can kind of ramp up the hours. It's very, there's a very simple strategy to kind of starting out. Right. And then,
and there's a need for it. And
oh,
it's a,
yeah,
scalable,
yeah, massive
market. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely massive. And that could teach you some ideas on how, I mean, there are many ways on how to scale your time after that, but I wouldn't worry about it to begin with. I would just worry about becoming the best teacher and covering my fixed costs. Mm-hmm. And then slowly, as your prices go up and your skills, you get better at teaching, you can sort of pivot into other things. Like, you can take, let's say you have 10 students, you could ask them for permission to record the sessions, and then,
right,
you can cut up the sessions into a course where you kind of exemplify all the problems that speakers typically have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you give the course to your students for free as a thank you for being featured.
Right.
You know, that's basically you doing something you're being paid for. And then on the side, you kind of do the, you know, the tweaking, the editing and stuff.
Right.
And if you do that, then eventually you're going to have a nice big course program, whatever you want to call it, that you could sell over and over again. And then you can,
right,
give your future students a discount.
Right.
Because, oh yeah, you're taking this German class with me. I really like, we're really having a lot of fun. I made this thing. If you're interested, here's a 50% coupon. I only give this coupon to my students. It's just if you like to do a little bit of studying in your off time, features 20 people who are having similar problems with this, and this that you are. You would sell so many courses that way, because there's a lot of trust there. There's a lot of social proof as well, because it's,
yes,
the course features students that are in the same position as your new student.
Right.
So that's kind of my basic get started working for yourself.
I think it's genius. And the content itself is going to be so much better too than if you're just trying to create a course from scratch and,
yeah,
and not having that seat time and that practice of actually teaching it to real live humans, I think.
That's a big project as well. If you want to, let's say you want to build like at I Will Teach Your Language, we have a series of courses called Uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
And they take us about a year to make.
Right.
And we're a professional course creation company, you know, essentially. I mean, we obviously have language experts who come in and do the lessons and the language specific bits, but we have the all the plans and all, mm-hmm, the know-how of how to build the course, and it still takes that long. So,
right,
that's why I recommend people to start small, and the course that you make, you know, if you sell a couple of hours of content that's nicely cut up and exemplified and maybe with some sheets of some, what do you call it, like exercise sheets,
mm-hmm,
you know, you don't have to try and make a $1,000 course. You can just make a $27 or $29,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And you just go for volume instead. You put it on something like Udemy, which is a public open course platform where people, they will promote your course for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
That could be kind of your business card. You know how they used to say that books are business cards, are the best business cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's to a degree very true as well. And going on that tangent just for a second is, how hard would it be if you're a German native speaker to write a book like 55 really rude sentences in German and put it on Amazon?
Right.
Or 200 sports terms for German learners or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't take long to make. You can sell it for a couple of euros. And you're just kind of building up almost like an empire, you know, it's right. Like buying, it's a little bit like buying real estate and you're getting rental income from different sources, but this is more like, you know, virtual real estate where you produce all these assets and they're not mega big projects, any of them, mm-hmm. but you slowly build it up. And if you find that, oh, I really like writing and people are really loving this book, you make a series of books, right. You know? I think a lot of authors started that way,
right.
You know? A kind of a series of books don't start with you thinking you need to write a series, right?
Yeah. Well, it goes back to talking about learning a language in the first place. You see this mountain in front of you of everything you need to learn before you're like fully, you know, like native level or you're close to native level fluency. And it's too big and it's overwhelming. Yeah, same thing with writing a book. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about that for years.
Yeah.
Well, when I first released
Master Japanese in 2010, I mean, that was the only reason that even ever was released is I announced publicly that it's coming out on a specific date. You know, had I not mm-hmm. done that, I don't think I ever would have finished it because it's a huge undertaking. But I mean, it also was a much smaller thing in scope when I first did it. I mean, I look back at the first version I released in 2010. I'm like, why did anyone ever buy this compared to what it is now? I mean, it's so much more fleshed out and there's, you know, additional resources to go with it. And there's worksheets and there's, I mean, it is really a course almost now. It's like it's an autodidactic self-guided course in a book format. But yeah, I think if I knew what it was going to become now, I don't think I ever would have started. It was just, it would be too much work between then
yeah,
and here.
Exactly.
But you do it bit by bit and you put out the first version and then you get feedback and you improve on it. And yeah, it keeps getting better and better. So.
Yeah, and I definitely will get my book out, but I just wanted to wrap it up by saying that brings us back to one of the first things I said in this recording. That was the only reason that I kept doing actual fluency and producing content for language learning, and I would say in effect actually continuing the hobby of being involved in languages, because if I hadn't produced podcast episodes or blog posts, I'm not sure I would have gone to any other events, because it takes some time to make deep connections in anywhere, you know? So if I hadn't continued, if I hadn't made it public, and that's where that was the connection is, I made it a public pledge to make podcast episodes. I had a small audience. When I went to my first plugger gathering, somebody came up to me and showed me their podcast subscription feed with actual fluency in it. And that was just really powerful.
Yeah.
Actually, a few people came up and said they liked the podcast, and that was the start of everything.
Yeah.
All that I've done since then was started that way, but it was all about a public pledge. It was all about an accountability mm-hmm. that basically got me to where I am today with, you know, 164 or 165 episodes. And just, I think that's not difficult. You know, you can produce as many podcasts as you want, but for someone who was in a real rut, who didn't really know what to do with life and mm-hmm. just playing video games all day, that's a huge achievement. Like that, just the consistency and, you know, it hasn't always been week to week, you know, there's been some long breaks occasionally, but it's sticking to it that gets you the results, whether you're trying to create a kind of a career for yourself or you're just learning a language. If you're learning a language, you need to stick with it. It's all about consistency.
Yeah.
And if you change it all the time, then you're not going to learn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Consistency, I think, it's maximum adulting when you realize that consistency is kind of the key to everything.
You know, it really is.
Yeah. Because everyone can eat healthy for a day or a week. You know, everyone can record a podcast. Everyone can spend an hour, you know, studying a language on one day, but it's doing that for a week and then a month and then a year and then a decade. Like, that's where all the magic happens, is in that long, you know, it's the compound interest effect, really, whether it's getting in shape, learning a language, investing, you know, and trying to reach financial independence, which is kind of my new thing I'm interested in these days. It's all compound interest, everything, all the magic of life. Exactly.
We might have talked about that before in this recording, but everything is truly connected. If you want to be a good singer, a good violinist, if you want to lose weight, if you want to be financially independent before you're 40, you know, it doesn't matter what.
Well, that's not going to happen because I only have a few months left. Before you play the lottery, or
you have to put out a new course, a new masterclass.
Maybe before I'm 50, that's probably, or 45.
But it doesn't matter what the pursuit is. Yeah. It's just that the principles to get you there are universal. I just think languages are some of the nicer areas to be interested in because we all speak a language, at least one. Well, I mean, most of us anyway, speak at least one language. So we know kind of the mechanics of speaking a language. You know, we know what it means. You know, adults have a lot of advantages when it comes to language learning. If I had to learn something like, let's say I really wanted to be in a musical performance, I mean, just that's almost like becoming an astronaut. You know, it's not like it couldn't happen. I could definitely, it could happen. I could take a engineering, what do you need, a astro engineering degree. I could get in shape and I could pass the requirements and I could become an astronaut. I won't, and I don't want to anyway, but that's just such a big thing. Whereas I think language is, you know, part of everything we do. And it's so, I think it's so tangible in a way.
Right. And it's useful along the way, kind of going back
to previous. Mega useful. Stuff.
You know, with, like with learning to sing or with playing an instrument, like you're going to be making awful music for a long time, right? No one's going to want to listen to your crappy violin until you actually play the violin really well. But with a language, like if you speak 10 words, you can use those 10 words today and people will actually smile and be grateful for those 10 words. No one's going to be grateful for terrible violin.
That is very true. That is very true. So that's why I like languages. And, and I think
it's the best. Let's all agree. It's the best hobby of all.
I think so. I mean, you could do health as well. I think health and fitness is also very interesting.
It's my other world, but
especially mental health is something that it's not really talked about much. And
no, it should be,
you know, it should be.
That'll be our next episode. We can both. Because I haven't really talked about this publicly too much, but I've struggled with pretty severe depression off and on for much of my adult life, and just very recently have kind of discovered this whole new world of cognitive behavioral therapy and realizing that so much of what causes depression, you know, I used to always think it was environment or it was what I was eating or, and yes, those things are a factor, but realizing that it's literally the thoughts in your head are creating feelings and then those feelings create the depression. And if you can just catch those thoughts upstream before they become these monster distortions of reality, it's like, anyway, it's just, this is a too big of a tangent probably to bring up here, but it's just, it's amazing to realize that, how much that affects your entire life is just these thoughts in your head. So anyway.
Well, I would say just to finish that tangent, because I agree it's probably too big to discuss at this time. But I would say one thing is language learning is a great way to get out of a rut, whether that's depression or other kind of struggles you have, because it gives you a sense of real achievement, which is often lacking in depressive patients. And you get all these small wins, you make new connections. So if you go to like the German Stammtisch, like the German table at the meetup, the weekly meetup, you're making new connections, you're meeting new people, you're socializing, you're getting vitamin D from the sun. You know, there's a lot of positive benefits that people with depression could really use. Yeah. So I would say, not to prescribe it as a doctor or anything, obviously we don't want to make any medical claims here. We don't know anything about medicine or mental health, but anecdotally it worked really well for me, and I know it can work really well for other people. But I think my biggest frustration with it, with mental health, is that we live in a time of endless abundance. We live in the best time of human history. We have everything we need. We can do anything we want. We can learn anything we want. We can go anywhere we want. We can be anyone we want to be. But somehow it's making it worse. So we've got higher levels of suicide now than ever before. There's higher levels of mental health issues. And there's some discussion whether there are actually more mental health problems or we're just being more kind of open as a society and people are seeking out
more diagnoses. Health. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a combination, not to bring that up,
but I think it is actually that's increasing and it's, I think our expectations.
Is it comparison probably?
Yeah. That's, well, it's comparison. Problem. It's we have the time, you know, so the Maslow's hierarchy of needs thing. We now have the time and the bandwidth in our heads to have existential crises. You know, when you're just trying to survive hand to mouth, you don't have the time to get depressed or anxious. But also, I think probably one of the biggest things is just we have such a mismatch between what our genes expect, what, you know, sort of the environment we evolved in is so different in our modern world. You know, all the things that used to be survival advantages are now disadvantages.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Definitely. I mean,
we never had such abundance of food. We never had such abundance of sugar, of stimulation, yeah, of access to online sex and all these other things. It's like, there's all these things we evolved to do and pass on our genes are now almost a burden. And so it seems to be now that to succeed and to be happy in the modern world, you have to kind of almost go against a lot of our genetic programming or engineer your environment in such a way that you can honor your evolutionary heritage without going crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of problems there. Yeah. Honestly, there is. And that would be something that I'd love to explore deeper in, I don't know, maybe a complementary project to Actual Fluency or some kind of a podcast. But the problem is also that you're getting into very dangerous territory.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a professional, let's say you have a psychology degree or a psychiatric degree, if you're a trained professional, then maybe you can make content about that or talk about it. But I think it's really dangerous for people like us who are, I mean, I know you know a lot more about health than I do. I don't know how that, if you study a lot of mental health, but for me, pretty much all I know and say is anecdotal, you know, it's just, and the danger of giving people who are really in the shits, to be frank, the wrong advice is too big of a risk to, it outweighs the positives, I think, in many ways. So it is a bit of a dilemma, but I would say, just to keep it on the language learning tangent, if you're not feeling totally, if you're not feeling fantastic, let's put it that way, learning languages can be a great hobby. I'm living proof. I think it definitely helped me a lot. Gave me some purpose, you know, just the idea. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like just the idea of finishing a textbook, that's a goal. And I think people with depression often don't see any kind of purpose. They don't really, there's no point in getting out of bed because there's nothing going on. But if your goal was to finish the textbook, suddenly you've got a mini mission. And if you successfully test it correctly on 20 different words on your flashcards, then, you know, there you go.
Right.
You're already making a lot of progress. So, yeah, like I said, not health professionals, not anyway, just putting that disclaimer out there. But I would encourage people to do, if you are feeling terrible, as I did years ago, it's good to get some help, you know, just start the process.
Yep.
Talk to your GP, talk to your doctor.
Right.
Exactly. Talk to your parents or friends or sisters or brothers or whatever. Just say, like, I'm not really feeling great, you know. Mm-hmm. I've got a bit of the blues, and that is the starting point for getting better, you know. Don't bundle it all up, but that's what worked for me.
I would also highly recommend, there's a book called Feeling Good, which I've started reading recently. That's been very, very helpful. It's by he is a licensed professional in this stuff, so he can add some, professional gravitas to the conversation. But
yeah, that's good. We need some professionalism in this, honestly.
But I will say, I mean, both with language learning and with, you know, this other kind of health-related stuff, no one can argue with your experience. No one can argue with your lived life, you know? And so there's nothing that needs to stop you from sharing what you've done and has worked for you, whether that's learning a language or, you know, battling depression. So I think that's the key, is just stay focused on what you've done and what you've tried. And then, yeah, no one can argue with that.
And that's why you can start a language learning blog as well. Some right. people are like, oh, but I don't speak any languages. How can I blog about learning languages? Right. Well, that's exactly what you blog about. You right. blog about your experiences and your basically you're the amateur on the way to mastery.
Yeah. You're the hero on a hero's journey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like I don't know many people in the blogger community who are like super mega experts who just create content about how awesome they are all the time. It's all, you know, it's all about failure, really. Mm. It's all about the journey and the trials. So if you do want to put content out there, I think there's a huge gap in the market, actually. I don't know, not to make this too tactical for like online, making money online and stuff, but if you go on YouTube, there's really not that many quality language learning channels and videos coming out very often. Like there's a handful of people that I'm aware of mm-hmm. that make like decent videos, but take something like the weight loss niche and you've got a million videos a day about that topic.
Right.
So I think anyone listening out there who are, let's say they enjoy being on camera or they don't mind using their iPhone and just having like a bit of an extroverted personality is probably a good benefit. But if you recorded yourself learning a language and you showed, I mean, not to be an obvious plug here, but using one of our language courses, for instance, to learn Spanish, and every day you did a video about what you did that day and you linked back to the course with a referral link, I mean, I think that could just be massive. Mm-hmm. But people are not doing it. Obviously, it's a lot of work to learn a language, but that's just one example.
I think the biggest block there is people being willing to be vulnerable and to show themselves
yeah.
on camera, obviously making mistakes and you know, struggling. And, you know, I'll say, you know, I know we've mentioned Benny already a few times, but I think that's one of the things that he has done that has led his blog to be, and now his empire really to be so successful, is he's been willing to put himself out there in public struggling and going through this process because it's so compelling and you can connect with yeah. others that are going.
That's another example. Yeah. Benny used to do these videos where he was out in the field, so to speak, and actually using what little language he'd learned. And right. he really showed the process from start to finish. I mean, he didn't show him doing like 8 hours a day as he was at that time. He kind of glossed over that part, but, that could be someone listening to this right now could be the next Benny for sure, because that content I don't see it. Mm-hmm. Like it takes courage. And it takes a lot of work and it's not easy. But we've got amazing video cameras in our pocket now.
Right.
We probably had that 5 years ago as well, but the opportunity is there. And for someone who's in the kind of in the community who has like a pretty good idea of what's going on, that it's massively underrepresented on a place like YouTube. People might write about their experiences and they may do like a talking head video about, oh, this week I did that and then I did this. But actually showing the field of going out and practicing your language, there are not that many people who do that. And when they do, they're extremely popular. Yep. So, yeah, I would definitely give that a shot if people are interested in making videos or blogging, that kind of stuff. Definitely show the hero's journey.
Yeah. It's the story that we all love. I mean, every great novel, every great movie, I mean, it follows the same basic arc that, you know, Joseph Campbell made famous in his book, The Hero of the Thousand Faces, and then his Power of Myth series on PBS. But we all love the same basic idea of somebody going through the trials and tribulations of something difficult and then kind of coming back full circle, having survived the ordeal with something to say or to share. So yeah, definitely get, I guess this would be a good probably closing is, yeah, be brave, take the phone out of your pocket. And instead of getting on Facebook or Instagram, you know, turn on the camera and just go and show us your journey.
And you'll be unstoppable if you don't stop.
We should have a hashtag for them, like to mark this. So,
the language heroes,
language hero. Wait, no, that's already a thing, isn't it?
Somebody used to, but I don't know if it's a thing anymore.
What was his name? He was on the podcast. Kevin Morehouse. That's right. He had I think he does.
LanguageHero.com is for sale.
Yeah, I think that project was abandoned. But
it's a great idea, though, to be a language hero.
Let's do it. Hashtag language hero. Get out there. Do it.
We're unofficially promoting a couple of other websites that have nothing to do with us, but
that's all right.
No, I mean, I agree with it. Yeah, be a hero, and it's a lot easier than you think. And also, you don't need to build, but you don't need to climb the mountain to start seeing positive effects. And whether that's for your mental health or for your hobbies or for your career, whatever the reasons is you want to do this, you can just get started. You know, there's no cost of entry really, except for a little bit of your time.
Right.
But if you're watching 6 hours of Netflix every day, you could probably, you know, spare a little bit of that time for other things. And really, it's great when you get to the point of other people enjoying or reading your content and using that as inspiration.
Yeah.
So that's big recommendation.
Yep. Life changing. I mean, I know it's changed your life. Well, for it's changed me, it my was. Life. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And everyone, I think the guests we both had on our shows, I mean,
we're just getting started.
We are.
Like, that's the thing. Like, some people, I mean, we've been doing it for a couple of years, but some people, 5 years in terms of building a personal brand or a business is not that much. Mm-hmm. That's not a lot of time. And I'm only just getting started. I'm only just figuring out what it is, what I want to produce, how I can produce it the best way, and like the quality and how I best can serve people. And we talked about
who you're serving. I think that's something that I'm still kind of trying to figure out exactly who it is I can help most with what I do. Yeah.
And there's so many ways to do it. And I don't pretend to know anything really. I'm just trying to go along and try something new. Oops, that didn't work. I'll try something else. And eventually you find something that works and then you just keep doing more of it. And you just have, it's such a different mentality than going, you know, I'll just have the school teachers tell me what to do and I'll just let my boss tell me what to do. Like with what we're talking about, you can really do whatever you want to do.
Right.
At any time. From anywhere, usually, as well. Like,
yes.
Languages are incredibly flexible.
Yes.
Like, I've seen more of the world through languages than ever before. Like, I used to say, sort of half-joking, that since I discovered this language learning niche and hobby 5 years ago, I've traveled more than the other 25 years combined. You know, and that's saying something. This year, I won't travel that much, but I'll still be taking about 20 flights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, that's quite a lot of travel.
Yeah.
It's not as I did more like 2 years ago. I went to every conference, but now I go to most of the conferences to hang out with people, meet people, network. But it also gives me opportunities to travel to other places.
Right.
And that's only because I have this flexible job in the language learning industry, which I got only because I was producing content. So
right.
Yeah, you can.
And I would even say that even if you can't travel at the moment to all these places, you can travel, you know, in air quotes, to other countries and cultures via Skype or even Netflix or a local restaurant, you know.
Maybe you don't want to travel. Like,
right.
Not everyone wants to travel, but whatever you want to do, you can do that through language as a sort of overall category, like health and fitness and, you know, all these your big tier money, all these categories, like languages is one of them.
Yeah.
And you can do a lot with it that it's not possible other places.
Truth.
Go for it. Yeah, that's it.
I like it.
And I don't know what I honestly, and this is a bit of a fourth wall, I guess, meta. I have no idea what we've just produced with this.
Me either.
Recording.
That's okay. Three-hour.
That's another example.
this might be the longest interview I think I've ever done for the podcast, but it's good. It's because you and I both have all this meta wisdom that we've sucked out like hungry vampires from all these other polyglots that we have.
We don't often get to talk about that because it's often confined to the language learning niche, like just learning languages. I mean, not that just in that is a bit misplaced, but you know, the kind of the ideas and theories and everything ties together, and it really applies to all areas of life, happiness in general. So I think that's why I've been a bit chatty in this episode is it's not something I get to talk about very much.
Yeah.
It's not often that I get to extrapolate from the language learning onto the bigger picture, so to speak.
Right. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah, it's good fun. Like, if my voice wasn't breaking slightly, I think I could have definitely gone on for a few more hours. So, I guess we can make it, we can let the people decide. You know, the people who listen to the end. I mean, we should almost reward someone if they hear this part.
Yeah, if you've listened this far, you get it.
Yeah, what can we give? We'll give you a package. Just email one of us and use the code word pineapple, and then.
There we go. Yeah. Email Chris.
We'll hook you up,
or myself.
Whoever emails first, we'll hook you up with something like a swag bag or something.
There we go. Okay, that's a deal.
After you, because I think getting this far, honestly, is a bit of an achievement, and it deserves a lot of recognition.
Yeah, I almost want to say, like, you shouldn't have listened this far. You should go out. You should be doing something more productive in your life, like actually learning a language or take a walk.
Long podcasts are becoming the norm. Have you not seen the Joe Rogan Experience and H3? What's the other guy who also does really long episodes? Anyway, you know, it's becoming quite mainstream. So there might be some people, maybe you're commuting, maybe you're stuck in the notorious LA traffic that we mentioned earlier, and you couldn't figure out how to switch to a different episode. So you were stuck with us for the whole time. But anyway, I really want to say thank you for listening, and thank you for being part of this whole world with me and John. I really am grateful for all the messages I get, all the people come up to me and talk about episodes they've listened to or anything that I've done they enjoy, and as someone who really had no purpose, nothing at some point, I would literally wake up, turn on the computer, play World of Warcraft, order pizza, go to bed. That was it every day. So to get to a point where somebody is actually saying, you know, that episode you did with Peter's Michael or whatever, I really enjoyed that because of this and this, and then I took action and did that this and that. There's no replacement for that feeling of fulfillment and purpose. And I think the reason that so many people are struggling is that they don't have that. So I just want to say I'm really grateful for anyone who's listening. I mean, especially if you made it this far, I will say. Yeah, that's really a commitment, really well done. But anyone, I'm really grateful for, any listener. And John, thank you so much for agreeing to this kind of experiment with me.
It was fun.
and for all you do. And we had, like you said, we had a good time in Bratislava recently. So I hope we get a chance to hang out again.
Some late nights.
You were kind of rough one morning.
I did learn my lesson to never go out and drink with a Dane.
You held your own. I think the problem is where we were with Bratislava with the one euro beers. You know, it's risky. All right.
Thank you to everyone listening. And I was going to say, do get in touch. I mean, I think some people think, I don't want to bug somebody, or they probably get so many emails. And no, we always love hearing from listeners and readers. It always brightens our day. So, if something has resonated with you, or you have a question, or if you want us to cover a specific topic in the future, or interview a particular polyglot or linguist or language lover, anybody, definitely do reach out. I'm John at languagemaster.com, and Chris is?
Chris at actualfluency.com.
Boom.
But anytime, honestly. I love getting emails. I'm kind of addicted, honestly, to emails. And anytime people want to talk about any of these things, or maybe you want help on setting your own blog or any kind of project up.
Chris is the absolute language business, like, expert. So definitely... Yeah, he's got, I've learned a lot from you, actually, in our conversation. So I'm grateful for that.
Appreciate it.
And for our friendship. So and many, many more conversations to come.
I hope so. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And do check out actualfluency.com. Check out Chris's upcoming polyglot cruise.
Should be fun,
Yeah,
language mastery, of course. Especially if you're learning the Japanese or Chinese. Some good stuff there.
Thank you.
But keep up the good work.
I shall do my best. All right, everybody. Onwards and upwards. If you are struggling with depression, get help. Read Feeling Good and learn language. Yeah, it's probably one of the best ways to find light. out of the darkness.
Yeah, so I think so.
I think so too. All right, brother.
All right. Cheers.
Talk to you soon.
If you're looking for a language teacher to enhance your language learning, then I highly recommend Italki. Italki is the world's biggest tutoring platform, and you can find thousands of teachers and tutors at very reasonable prices. Get a free lesson after completing your first lesson by going to languageteacher.co.